The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have Zach Gallen today. Zach is doing something really cool with Shamrock Farms, one of our longtime partners through the years, off and on, but we appreciate Shamrock. And Zach Gallen, I'm going to talk to Zach about his future in Arizona. Because, yeah, we'll talk about the charitable side, but I also want to know, okay, what's going on with you and your future here? It's kind of like we get this space with players and we all want to say, oh, they'll never leave. And I'm not saying he's leaving. I'll wait to hear from him. But when you see, like, I'll just use Zach Gallen as an example. Jordan Montgomery parachutes in right before the season starts. He's making $25 million this year. I don't care how happy you are in any city, you do have to experiment and see what else is out there. So I'm going to ask Zach about that, along with the charitable side. John Wilner. So we are getting very close, very, very close to getting through the dog days of summer. This year's dog days are different than others, though. I will explain why momentarily, because we have a mega event coming up within a week, and you're thinking, it's supposed to be 115 again today. Well, no, there's a mega event that's coming. Pac-12 is gone. Big 12 is new. Pac-12 is actually not dead until August 2nd, I believe, is when Wilner said is the final day of business. So we'll probably talk about that. But I think that Big 12 Media Day, Jordy's going to be there. Spurge is going to be there. Jordan Hamm, Jordan Spurgeon. I'm probably going to go. There's some other media days I've been looking at going to. So I want to chop it up with John about the, okay, what are the storylines? And let's start having some serious college football conversation. We'll get in the weeds a little bit about some things that have come up the last couple of weeks. We've been in best subs last couple of weeks. So we have to get caught up with John Wilner. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, the terrific people at Desert Financial Credit Union, they are right here in the valley. They don't parachute in. I've used that term twice today, but it's true. From other parts beyond. No, they've been here through the years and trusted and reliable. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Appreciate Jeff Mishi and their support. I am not unhappy with the Diamondbacks having a 5-4 road trip. There were some really ugly moments in Philadelphia. I mean, really ugly moments. But the Phillies are at near full strength. The Diamondbacks are not, in particular with their starting rotation. We're going to talk to Zach about that here momentarily. To go through a road trip where you play some of the have-nots, and where you go actually the last 9 days, they had the Angels, had the White Sox, they had, why am I blanking on who they had? I know I've been on vacation. You guys are screaming at the stream. You idiot. They had fill in the blank. Anyways, it'll hit me here in a second. So they had some teams that are less than them. They played Washington. Okay. And Washington's not terrible. It's Washington, right? Yeah, I'm not losing my mind here. I am back from vacation. I can laugh at myself. Gotta laugh at yourself sometimes. But so they go on this road trip and they end up going 5-4. They go 5-4. I'm fine with that. They come home, they have Minnesota, and they have the A's this week. Minnesota's pretty good. The A's are not as bad as people have looked at them to be through the years. But I have to tell you, I'm already way past this week. Way, way, way past this week. Because next week they have the Dodgers and they have the Padres. And it's out on the coast. So here's what usually happens. Usually, when it gets to July 1st, the Diamondbacks have a 3 or 4 game series with the Dodgers. Go look it up. I'm usually right on this. In fact, I know I'm right on this. And they go to that series, and they just get jack-stomped, usually. Usually. And then the Dodger lead today, I think, is 9 or 8. Dodgers have lost bets. They've had some nicks on their roster. I don't think that they're uncatchable. When you go through what's happened with the Diamondbacks and not having their big guns in the rotation for the most part, I think that this has been a team of real tough luck. Gabriel Moreno goes down. He's starting to play well. He goes down. It's like there's one thing after the next. Suarez, I don't think, is going to be here once Alec Thomas comes off of the injured list. So there's still movement on the roster, but the main thing is Zach hasn't been there, Merrill Kelly hasn't been there, Rodriguez hasn't been there. I don't care who you are. You take three big guns off, and you're still just one game out of the wild card. That's really good. So I'm looking at next week and saying, all right, let's just see where we're at. And I will run this by Zach Gallen when we have him on here in a few minutes. I mentioned the big story. So the NBA draft is this week. The Suns have the 22nd pick. The only intrigue to me is the LeBron James, Bronny James thing. That's it. You pick somebody at 22, and of course we're going to hear this was the player we wanted all along. This is a great fit. We're going to hear all the usual nonsense. We don't know. Nobody knows. Well, you're diminishing the draft. It's fine. You have a first-round pick. You don't have any after that for a long time. So what direction do they go? And if Bronny is there, who is the team that's going to say, I am taking Bronny James? That's it. That's the only intrigue. That's the only reason I'm going to watch. And I don't even know if I'm going to watch that much. No, the big story, the mega story is Caitlin Clark is coming to the Valley on Sunday. That's it. That is the major story. Because if you look at what's happened in women's sports, we started doing a women in sports platform in 2015. And of course, there are people that, fortunately for me, I've just done this, but there are people that were like, why would you do such a thing? I don't know. I had two daughters. Our industry sucks when it comes to doing a good job on women's sports. It does. It does. It's easy to go do all the usual stuff that everybody else is doing. But no, we went on the road less traveled. So here's Caitlin Clark coming here this Sunday. Tickets for this game are over $1,500 in the lower bowl to watch a women's basketball game. Television ratings have been great. Oh, but they're not what the men's are. Nobody's saying that they're going to be. There's an audience. I'm very much looking forward to her being in the Valley on Sunday. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to go. If I go, am I going to have a better seat than I have here in my office? That's the main thing. Am I going to be allowed to go into a press conference? Yeah. And will I be allowed to ask like one question? I don't need to. I swear if somebody says, what does it mean to you have fans here? Have you watched it like the swim trials and the Olympic stuff? By the way, Michael Phelps has been great. Michael Phelps has been so good on the swim trials. My wife is a swimmer. She's one of those that there's no way that I could do what she does. Back and forth, back and forth. For when we go to the place where we work out, it's 45 minutes of her just going back and forth. There's no way. I find the massage chair. That's what I find. And she's going back and forth. And she's got her little AirPods in. She's got her cap on. And as long as I've known this girl, and it's been long time. She is so into swimming. So the household gets overtaken when it's swim, and she knows everything about these swimmers. Why aren't you doing more on them? I don't know. I don't have time to dig into all that. Doesn't mean I don't like the Olympics. But man, the questions afterwards, how does it feel to be going to Paris? I think it sucks. What do you mean? How does it feel? I don't even like going to Paris. I don't even like... I just wish somebody would say, you know, I'm much more concerned with having a big fat steak than being out of breath and telling you, you know, what does it mean to have fans here for you? Well, it means that people paid money. That's what it means. And that's all it means. I would just like to see a little bit more than the predictable. Okay, they swim. Rowdy Gaines goes crazy. I like him. He and Phelps are showing him cheerleading. That's questionable, but I get it. The idea of rooting. They did a thing, was it Friday night? My wife's sitting there watching, and NBC did this social media thing with Phelps. It was just dreadful. It's just like, we got to do something to get social media worked in on this. So we're going to show you how big, mean, and angry the Australians are. Ooh. I couldn't get out of there quick enough. It's like, really? You're going to watch this stuff? It's my problem. It's a Brad problem. So, you know, my consumption is this back to Caitlin Clark. I can go for the Olympics, Caitlin Clark. It's that she's going to be here this week, and we'll see how the arena responds, acts. How's Taurasi going to be to her? Because there's been this whole thing about how catty Di has been towards towards Caitlin. I know we have to fill time, but it's 115 degrees. She has said things that are a veteran not giving it to a kid. That happens. But there are those that feel as though they're, and this is some of my circles, that Taurasi's been way over the top in her perceived bitterness, arrogance, whatever. No, that's what makes her Diana Taurasi, in my opinion. So I'm looking forward to that on Sunday. Game 7 tonight in the Stanley Cup, Edmonton at Florida. I will take some of that in. I watched Scheffler win again yesterday. And we've got Zach Gallen on the other side, followed by John Wilner. Jared Nielsen is the chairman of the board. He's been hiking mountains. If anything goes wrong, it's his fault. We're back with Zach Gallen next. All right, it's great to see Zach Gallen across from us. There's big news that Zach is going to share. And no, he's not starting in the series against Minnesota this week, I don't believe. But he has bigger news than that. And I'll just give a backdrop. I'll turn it over to you. So back in the day, Gonzo and I, with our friends at Shamrock Farms, had a milk guzzling contest in the late 90s. We did it live on the air. And unfortunately, I just drank way too much milk. And Luis was laughing at me as I was on the ground having a great time. The people at Shamrock loved it. So whenever Shamrock says, hey, we've got something, and it's with you, it's with your foundation, and it's really cool that you're doing this. I'll get to some baseball stuff in a minute, but this is something really cool. Take it away. What's going on with you and Shamrock Farms?
Yeah, so this is my sixth year in the Valley now. So Arizona's just starting to feel a lot more like home, starting to put, you know, down roots. Just bought a house here. And so for me to, it was time for me to start getting involved in the community. So just throughout the last 6 months or so, we've kind of just identified, certain causes and, you know, just the one, you know, where kids are food insecure, especially in the summer months, something I didn't even think about, you know, in terms of the heat and things like that. Just, you know, me being from New Jersey, it's not something that is talked about as much. So come out here and learn about, you know, especially in the summer months, it being so hot here. And, you know, kids don't have school lunches they can count on anymore. So in the summertime, them being food insecure, it was like, okay, this is a no-brainer. This is something we have to get involved in. So between me, Shamrock Farms and St. Mary's Food Bank, we've kind of got a nice little partnership here. And Shamrock's donating 2,300 gallons of milk to kind of help the cause. And it's been humbling, really, for sure.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, they are awesome here in the community. They are the hometown dairy. Everything is here close by, and that's what makes Shamrock so strong. This is something, too, fans, that you can get involved in. MLB.com/DBACKS community, or go to firstfoodbank.org with St. Mary's. You can sign up there. When you get approached about things, okay, this is more of a business side of sports, Zach. When you get approached about things, you probably get approached a ton. How do you decide, okay, this is a priority like what you're doing with Shamrock Farms?
Yeah, I think you kind of, I don't know, I you kind of get this like tingle, like whatever, like you just kind of have this feeling in your gut, like I guess it is. You're like, okay, this is something that I need to be a part of. Sometimes, you know, you just got to listen to your gut, really. There's certain things that, you know, you get proposed and it's like, that might be asking too much. Like there might not be, you know, I might not be able to affect it as much as I want to, or, you know, they might be asking for too much of your time to where you're not able to make an impact like you want to. And this just kind of felt like it was a no brainer. I got that feeling in my gut of like, yeah, I think this is something that, I need to be a part of. It just, the whole thing, and just for me, it goes back to when I was a kid, just my parents instilling to me, like, you know, if you're in a position where you're fortunate enough, you need to be able to give back. And then I go to a high school where, you know, community service is a requirement. And by the end of it, it's not you want to do it. You want to be there. It doesn't feel like a chore. And then just when I was at Carolina, same thing, we did community service events. And now getting here, being able to be able to make an impact financially, but also with just kind of my platform in the community, it was a no-brainer. And I can't imagine being in the shoes of these kids that aren't sure where, you know, their next meal is coming from, and they're food insecure and they're not getting the basic nutrients that they need, considering, you know, at the level, you know, that I'm at in terms of playing, we take such care of our diet and it's something that we're so focused on. So to kind of flip it and think about the inverse of, you know, kids just, you know, need basic nutrients just to survive. You know, it made too much sense for me to get involved.
Zach Gallen with us for a couple of minutes. I've been in the Valley for over 30 years, so I see the check presentation, or I've seen people that just do the blow by where they show up, they shake some hands, wave, get on camera, leave. That's not you from what I've seen. And so back on your point of going through each one line by line, when Shamrock first came to you, the play on words of Gallen, what'd you think?
Yeah. I mean, it like, I think it made too much sense again. Same thing, like Gallen, the milkman. It seemed like too good of a partnership. And then they've kind of just blown me out of the water in the sense of now they want to get involved in something that, you know, I felt pretty, pretty strongly about. When we started this partnership, it was just, you know, just something to be a part of. And then for me, getting involved in the community and then jumping in right away and saying, hey, we want to donate 2,300 gallons. Like, I didn't expect that at all. So for me, I'm very fortunate that they want to be able to help and get involved. You know, that just is another reason why I'm proud to be partnered with them, just for their values in terms of, you know, helping the community, and things like that. It's just a no brainer.
Right. Before I get you out of here, MLB.com/DBACKS community. There's one spot, firstfoodbank.org with St. Mary's. You could sign up there. The Zach Gallen 23 Charitable Fund teaming up with our hometown Shamrock Farms. Some baseball stuff. When are you going to be back on the mound?
Hopefully here soon. I have a sim game today. You know, hopefully everything goes well. I've been feeling pretty good. I've been progressing really, you know, really well. So, now those decisions are a little bit above my pay grade. If it was up to me, I would have been back as soon as I felt good. And I've been, you know, chomping at the bit to get back. So hopefully today goes well. And then we'll have that discussion of what the next steps are, but yeah, hopefully here soon and we'll see what happens.
The fact that the team is where they are with the amount of injuries that they've had speaks to a couple of things. I think it's the grit of the team. One, the depth of the team to reach down on the farm. Yeah, there's been some uneven moments, but when you look at losing yourself and Merrill and Rodriguez haven't pitched this year, Montgomery came in late and is just trying to round into form and looks like he is. In fact, you're right there for postseason and we're not even at the halfway mark. It's this week, halfway mark. What do you make out of the season so far with all the injuries and adversity?
Yeah, you touched on it perfectly. I said in another interview is that like those are the two biggest things, like the culture of this organization, and that starts from the top down, and then the depth of this organization. Obviously, we came into this year with very lofty expectations, and just because of how we were last year, and inherently that probably still put a little bit of pressure on us. I mean, just because we felt like, you know, we wanted to get where we wanted to get to last year. But at the same time, for guys to be able to keep their cool about them and be able to come up and fill in spots where they probably weren't expecting to be in and take on certain roles they weren't expecting to take on, I think just speaks to the culture that we have, just kind of the clubhouse we've had. Like, just, you know, everyone's like, all right, just, hey, we had to, you know, pull at 55%. Now we got to pull at 60%, you know, just in terms of pulling our weight. You know, we got one of our guys is down. We got to step it up just a little bit. And guys have stepped up. I mean, if you would have told, you know, if you would have asked us at the beginning of the year, the amount of time that, you know, big key guys are going to miss, you probably don't think you're two games under 500 and you're a game out of the wild card. I know fans are disappointed that the season hasn't probably gotten off to the start that they had imagined just because of the way the season ended last year. But I think it just is it just drives home the fact that this team's got an unbelievable culture, an unbelievable clubhouse, and like they're grinding for one another, pulling for one another, and they're keeping their head above water when they're missing, you know, five five key guys at you know, certain points in time throughout the season. And just for the guys that are healthy right now to be able to hold the line until, you know, the reinforcements get back, is really exciting if you ask me.
Yeah. I mean, Gabby going down the other day, it was just like, can this team ever catch a break? It's just, it's been one of those seasons and that.
Yeah. I mean, in 21, we had very similar injuries, you know, in terms of the amount, and we didn't have the depth. Like, so it's, you know, you got to tip your cap to Hayes and Amio and Fitz for them, you know, stocking the, you know, the minor leagues and the 40 man to be able to fill in with that depth, you know, and have guys come right in and be able to succeed right away. Because I know, if you know, in years past, we've had this, and that was the year we lost 110 games. So for us to, you know, have these injuries and be able to plug guys in right away and just you know, don't have to do anything more than what you're capable of doing, you know, says a lot about, you know, this organization as a whole.
Last question, I'll get you out of here. You mentioned it off the top that you're laying down roots. Fans ask me, what do you think is going to happen on the business side of baseball with Zach Gallen? And I say, look, I'm all the way back to when they drafted Andy Bennis and signed Randy and brought in Kurt. And I've seen this through the years. This stuff tends to work itself out. But here in Arizona, you're having a good situation. Do you look at the business side and what's going on around you in the game and say, I got to keep my options open? Or you said it earlier, I'm putting down roots. Is this your home as you see it for your career?
Yeah, I think probably both sides of that. I'm on both sides of the fence. Like, I love it here. My girlfriend's from here. Her family's from here. You know, I'm here now 6 years, so I'm starting to get pretty acclimated to the Valley. So I would, you know, love to be here. But at the same time, I think I'd be a fool not to just, you know, you just see how this game is and you understand, you know, how things change. They can change quickly. They can, you know, whatever it is. So I think I'd be a fool to kind of keep the blinders on. But at the same time, I do love it here. And I would love to, you know, spend time here. So for me, it's a no-brainer. And I know that, like you said, things will work themselves out the way that, you know, they're supposed to. I will say this, Phoenix has not made a bad impression on me by any means. So, there's definitely places where you could go and play and be like, that's not for me. I can check that off. So Phoenix, in that sense, though, they check the box in a place where I could see myself, you know, spending the rest of my career. But at the same time, there's other factors at play. And, you know, so we'll see what happens when that time comes.
Zach Gallen, 23 Charitable Fund, is teaming up with Arizona's Hometown Dairy. Shamrock Farms has been here forever. They are great people. And this initiative that Zach has put together with St. Mary's Food Bank, you can go to MLB.com/DBAC/community. Or firstfoodbank.org. Appreciate you. Appreciate your time. Good luck in your rehab assignment. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
As always, chopping it up with the great John Wilner. Wilner Hotline, nationally syndicated columnist. John Wilner knows all, tells all. It was the Pac-12. Now it is spread across the fruited plain. And this week, we turn the calendar into July, which means media days, John. It means everything's great. Every team's going to go undefeated. We have this amazing recruiting class. Oh, man. What do you make out of media days, John?
Well, the first thing that July means is normally you'd expect that the schools would be moving to their new conferences, right? In fact, SMU is joining the ACC officially on July 1st, the start of the fiscal year. But the Pac-12 being the Pac-12 is on a different calendar than everybody else, right? Because of the media rights agreement signed more than a decade ago, the schools aren't leaving the Pac-12 until August 2nd. So basically 4:59 p.m. on August 1st is their last minute in the conference. August 2nd is when they're officially members of the ACC, the Big 10, and the Big 12. Which means that the media days are going to take place before the schools are officially in their new leagues, which is, again, only in the Pac-12 do you get something like that. So, yes, lots of optimism for all the conferences, all the schools. Everybody has a great chemistry, great incoming class. The depth is awesome.
Yep.
They're super excited.
And best half, quarterback ever.
Best quarterback ever. Half that optimism is going to be shot by October 1st for most of those schools, right? And especially for a lot of the schools that are leaving the Pac-12 for their new leagues, because it's going to be a tough road for a whole bunch of them.
I think it'd be kind of fun to walk up to, Jed Fish and say, so what do you make out of the Pac-12 this year? And he'd say, because you're going to be at the Big Ten Media Days in late July. You're going to be there on the ground. So, Jed, what do you make out of the Pac-12 this year? Well, that's a really dumb question. Well, no, you're still part of the conference because the nincompoops beforehand didn't figure it out. Where's the Pac-12 logo? It's not dead yet. People haven't thrown dirt on the ground. You can ask.
Well, and technically there still is a Pac-12, right? Oregon State and Washington State will compete as a two-team league. And the other piece is a little, you know, diverging from football for a second, but the Olympics are going to start. Pac-12 athletes are going to be members of the Pac-12 when the Olympics start. But by the time the games end, they will be members of their new conferences. Another little interesting kind of sidelight to the whole thing.
So wait, we have the transfer portal in the Olympics. There it is.
Like, basically, yes.
They were at Oregon State at the start of qualifying. By the end, they said, we're out of here. We're at Purdue. That's how it goes.
Right, yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So, transfer portal is undefeated in all sports.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, in all seriousness, we get into the second week of July, and it's Big 12 Media Days in Las Vegas. Anything newsworthy out of that from your point of view? For me, Deion Sanders on display. He stiffed last year, the Pac-12 Media Days. He has been getting criticized like I haven't seen. People are expecting the wheels to fall off. Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, I think there's some anticipation. Is he going to drop some bombs about, hey, I hear all about the SEC and the Big Ten, but there's more to it. What are you expecting out of Big 12 Media Days?
Yeah, the Deion situation is interesting because everything is elevated with him, right? Elevated good, elevated bad. We'll see what he does. I think it's a little bit three-dimensional. I wouldn't say chess because it's still college football. So three-dimensional checkers in a way, right? With the schools, you're going to be interested to see what's the actual football news, right? Where are teams picked in the Big 12 preseason poll? What are the coaches saying about their rosters, about their quarterbacks, injuries, transfers, all that stuff? You got the actual football. Then you've got the conference changes, right? We know who's not going to get picked to win the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma. They're out. It's the first Big 12 media day ever without Texas and Oklahoma. I'm sure that they will have a little bit of a presence, you know, the specter of the Longhorns and Sooners not being there will be part of the story, but so will the arrival of the Four Corner schools for their first media day. So you're going to get a lot of talk about that and the conference changes. What's it going to be like as a 16-team league and the playoff, the impact of the expanded playoff is ever present. Then finally, there is the highest level of narrative, which is stuff at the conference office. I don't expect the Big 12 to announce that it is taking private equity. I think that they are a long way from securing that deal. I don't think that they're going to announce a naming rights deal for the conference, the All-State 12, the AT&T 12, whatever it is. I think that's still a few months away. It's such a big issue. A lot of legal pieces got to fall into place. My guess is they won't even take a title sponsor till after the football season. And then what might Brett Yormark say? I mean, he's always good for saying something, right? I think that they may announce, if I were going to guess, I'd guess they are going to announce the formation of a Big 12 alumni council made up of Big 12 athletes from all the schools, not Texas and Oklahoma, of course, but all the schools across varying sports that's going to serve as an advisory committee to the conference office and the university presidents on all these matters affecting college sports and how the athletes are impacted. So you could get a couple of kids, a couple of athletes from each school, former athletes from each school on the alumni council. But if my guess is that is the news, if they're going to break any news, it might be that Yormark hinted at the Alumni Council when he met with the media earlier this month after their spring meetings. And I'm going to guess that they are going to release a name of the names of maybe 16 or 32 former athletes on this Alumni Council.
Okay. That's kind of fun because you could look at Arizona, Rob Gronkowski.
Sure.
I mean, they're going to go with name players from each one of these. Like Baylor will have theirs. And, you know, I could go down the line. I could play a whole segment with you on, well, who should the representative be from Kansas State or from Iowa State? It would be Brock Purdy, let's just say. So I think that's fun for fans, something to look at. I think, John, I'll be interested because I'm going to be there in Vegas. How much, I don't want to use the word jealousy, but how much acceptance is there really going to be from the Big 12 coaches towards Dion, towards Kyle Whittingham, towards Kenny Dillingham, youngest coach that's out there? You know, so when you go down the line, Coach Brennan over at Arizona, are they going to be open with open arms? Is their brand of football going to mix in? Or are we going to get a lot of, well, they're coming into a different conference, it's much more physical, that's much more this, it's much more that? Are the coaches already in place going to say, you're not walking in here like you're going to own the place?
Well, what they say publicly on the podium could be different than what they're saying in the coaches' meetings, right? No doubt about that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that there will be acceptance. You know, it may not be, you know, full-throated acceptance, but it will be positive. They're going to want to present a united front, right? That is what the Big 12 is all about, is a united front. That's why the conference is still together. Texas is gone. Oklahoma's gone. These 16 are solid. But the Dion thing is interesting, right? Kyle Whittingham, I think he will receive a ton of respect, a ton of praise. Everybody in the coaching industry respects Whittingham. This is going to be his, I think it's his 20th year on the job in Salt Lake City. He's a dean, incredibly successful. I wonder about Dion, right? I mean, he has definitely generated some animosity in the last year and a half with other coaches. They have viewed some of his, I wouldn't say antics, but what he has said, the way he has managed his roster, there's been some skepticism. I think if they get asked a bunch about, hey, how, you know, what kind of impacts Colorado going to have, then you will get the, well, we'll see. This is a tough conference. We'll see how they do.
Well, how much of those coaches are going to say, I got to protect my turf in Texas in particular?
Well, yeah. Oh,
I got to recruit my recruiting base because I don't want Deion Sanders coming in here and just walking in and saying, okay, we're part of this now. And you need to come here and say, see you later, Baylor. See you later, TCU, and on and on and on.
Well, I mean, they've already been recruiting Texas. I mean, that's a big thing for him. Now he does have the Big 12 branding behind him. So look, recruiting plays a role in every sentence that head coaches utter every day of the year, right? I mean, they are always thinking about their money, and they're thinking about recruiting, and they're also thinking about winning. So certainly there could be some politics involved in how they approach Colorado and what they say about Dion. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But at the same time, the goal is going to be to present a united front. The Big 12 is a second-class conference, just like the ACC, right? I mean, the Big Ten.
Fans don't want to hear that, John. Fans don't want to hear that.
They don't
want to hear everything's great. We're in Lubbock. What are you talking about? We're a second-class conference.
Well, no, they don't. I agree.
You're not at Alabama. I'm sorry. You're not at Georgia. You're not there. So accept it.
Well, I agree. But because they are at the second level with the ACC, I think that is forging unity, right? They are banding together to do the best that they can under difficult circumstances. And so my guess is the conference office is, and the ADs are going to plead with the coaches ahead of time, united front, be welcoming, say positive things about the newcomers, be effusive about the conference, the parity. You will hear the word parity ad nauseum at the Big 12 media days. And frankly, that's the reality, is there is a lot of parity. You don't have the Ohio States and Alabamas and Georgias and Michigans. It's the difference between the top of the Big 12 and the bottom of the Big 12 is smaller than in any other conference. And they will try to use that as a narrative strength.
Okay. As you're sitting here today, which of the four corner schools that are coming into the Big 12, which one do you think is going to have the most success right out of the chute? Which one do you think is going to get their heads kicked in?
Well, I think Utah, I'm picking Utah to win the Big 12. I think they got the coaching stability. They got a veteran quarterback. They're good on the lines of scrimmage. They were battered by injuries last year. I don't think you get hit like that 2 years in a row. And they have a favorable schedule. So I think Utah's going to win the league. Arizona should contend, I think. Colorado, middle level. I think Colorado's going to be better than the skeptics think. And ASU, boy, it's going to be hard. I mean, that's the reality is Dillingham is early in the roster overhaul process. And I think that he needs two or three more years to get a real competitive depth chart together. If I'm picking one of the four that's going to really struggle, it would be ASU. ASU has the hardest schedule, too. That's another piece that we should, you know, it's the same thing with the Big Ten. The conferences are so big that who you miss is as important as who you're playing. Mm. And if you miss the way the Big 12 set up their master grid, you know, if you're missing both Kansas schools, that's a big deal. If you're playing both Kansas schools, because they're both good. So the four corner schools that miss Kansas, Kansas State have an advantage over the four corner schools that are playing Kansas and Kansas State.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Let's switch over to Big Ten Media Days. You're going to be there. What are you most looking forward to at Big Ten Media Days later in July?
Well, you know, same similar situation with how are the four new schools going to be accepted? What are they going to say? What are the other coaches and administrators going to say about them? But from a conference level standpoint, the thing I am most interested in about the Big Ten is the tiebreaker, right? They are getting rid of divisions. So the Big 10 championship game is no longer going to be Ohio State or Michigan beating Iowa and Wisconsin by 87 points. It's going to be first against second, the way it should be. Okay, so let's say there's a three-team tie for second place.
Okay.
Well, how do you figure out that? How do you break that tie? Because this is a conference that has 18 teams and only 9 conference games. So you're not playing 8 other teams. And how you do against other teams in the standings is an important piece of any tiebreaker. I just am going to find it fascinating. And I think the Big Ten will announce their tiebreaker procedure by Media Day, if not at Media Day. And it could be really interesting because everybody is missing 8 teams. I just personally am fascinated by that whole thing. And the tiebreaker isn't only about who gets into the Big 12 championship game. It's also going to be about determining who is in third place, who is in fourth, who is in fifth, which will matter for the playoff. Because the Big Ten is going to get 3 or 4 teams in the playoff, and the pecking order in the conference standings will impact who makes the playoff. So they're not just figuring out a tiebreaker for the Big Ten championship game. They're figuring out a tiebreaker for every level of the standings, which will impact the at-large teams for the CFP.
Okay, you're already convinced the Big Ten, they haven't even played a game, they're going to get 4 teams in.
Three or four for sure.
Three or four for sure. Okay. So half of that, because what is interesting now in this coming season to me, and I think to you as well, is that the playoff is going to be talked about every week. No longer do we have to wait till the end of October to start hearing from a committee. This is something that early on, like every game is going to matter, and even more so. And I believe that there's also this side story along with the playoff of these current Big Ten schools. Like, there's no way Indiana wants to see Oregon, Washington, USC, or UCLA do better than them. Because eventually, the football programs at some of these schools in the Big Ten are going to be lapped. And they don't want to be lapped. And Purdue doesn't want to be lapped. But they're probably going to be lapped. We all know Michigan and Ohio State and Iowa are going to be there right at the top. We don't know that about Minnesota. And so these new schools are coming in, new kids on the block. They want to be bullied, I would think. I would think that the Big Ten schools would say, we got to beat these up to protect our brand. We don't really want these guys. Am I right or wrong?
Well, competitively, you're right. But the interesting thing is those are the schools that voted for expansion. Minnesota, Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, all the schools that are going to competitively get moved down a notch because Oregon, Washington, and USC are coming into that league, they voted to expand. They voted to bring those teams in because they wanted the money, right? So they chose the money over their competitive position in football, which is an interesting decision. Tells you a lot about the state of college sports, doesn't it? So I agree, but they voted for them. So they kind of got to reap what they've sown in some ways. And frankly, Oregon's going to come in. I think Oregon's going to come in there and pound everybody. I think Oregon and Ohio State are clearly the two best teams. A Big Ten race.
Oh, Michigan fans are not going to like hearing this.
That's all right.
What are you doing, John?
It's a race for third place.
You're having a rock fight with Michigan fans right out of the gate. Come on.
Oregon is loaded. Ohio State is loaded. It is a race for third place in the Big Ten. That is my view. And I think Penn State's another team, right? And I don't know that Penn State was as on board with the expansion as the Illinois and Minnesotas and Purdue's of the world, but they have been consistently the third best team in the Big Ten. Well, guess what? Now they could end up being the fifth or sixth best team in the Big Ten because of the new kids.
When you say that those schools wanted the expansion, the presidents wanted the expansion.
Yeah.
It wasn't the head coaches. The head coaches now, it's like, what are you doing? You're making life a little bit more difficult for us, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. But that's the case, too, in Big 12 with basketball. Okay, we're bringing in Arizona. Now we got to deal with them, right? That is the great contrast in college sports is what you do, the financial moves you make can undercut your chances for competitive success. And I think that's happened too much. Getting into the college football playoff is going to be a big deal because you get to host a first-round game on campus. That's a huge deal. It's a huge fundraising opportunity for your university. Mm-hmm. And any strategic steps you take to decrease your chances to get in the playoff, undercut that experience. But yes, the playoff is going to dominate. I think the playoff is the biggest change in college football ever. I think it's bigger going from 4 to 12 than it was going to 4 in the first place.
Bigger than the portal? Bigger than NIL?
Bigger than everything. It is.
How do you think that, John? Every player is going to get paid now. What are you talking about? This is the bigger thing? It's only 12 schools.
In terms of what it does to the season, it is the biggest thing. Right. I mean, once you start the season, the portal is irrelevant. NIL is irrelevant. The rosters are set from September 1st to December 1st. The playoff is going to consume the season like nothing else, more than the Bowl Coalition, the Bowl Alliance, the BCS, the 14 playoff. All those things are going to look like amateur hour compared to the impact that the 12-team playoff is going to have every day of the week for 3 months. And I think it's going to be great. I'm going to be writing about it a ton. You're going to be talking about it a ton. You lose your second game by October 1st. You're not out of it. That's the biggest thing. More teams are going to have a chance deeper in the season. It's going to create so much more interest for so many more teams. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we should talk about it every single day.
I'm not opposed to that. I do have to wonder about the media days, those two in particular. Because SEC media days, it's like 5 days. They just want to keep rolling and rolling and rolling. It's fine. Knock yourselves out. The ACC is the one that's sitting over there. ACC is just teetering, it looks to me, from a distance. Like behind the scenes, I can't see a unified front. I think the Big 12 is looking at the ACC saying, well, what if we created a conference that was more basketball heavy? Yes, there's some good football programs. The SEC could say, you know what? We'll take Clemson. We'll take some of those schools away. We'll put them over in the SEC. What do you think about as we're coming into July, John, where the ACC is in the landscape? Because they're not going to be here long term. There's no way.
You wouldn't think so, at least in its current form. I mean, if Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State leave, the ACC schools could reform as a smaller conference based on the geography of the Atlantic coast. I wouldn't be surprised. Some of those schools could end up joining the Big 12 to create the Big 24. Wouldn't be surprised about that. I think it's going to take a few years for this thing to play out. But by 2030, I don't foresee the ACC having the same structure that it does now. Makes you wonder what Stanford and Cal are going to end up doing.
Sure.
Because if Florida State and Clemson, North Carolina leave, they are in a greatly depleted conference 3,000 miles from their campuses. So, yes, the ACC is in a different position, right? It is on the second tier with the Big 12, but it doesn't have the stability that the Big 12 does. It does, however, have Clemson and Florida State.
Well, let me jump in on that. They do have Notre Dame. Okay, so where's Notre Dame fall in all this?
Well, Notre Dame, the independent in football, and Notre Dame is a big factor in the playoff, because if they are one of the top 12 teams, top 11 teams, they're getting an at-large bid. That's written into the rules. So when you're doing the math on the CFP, it's 12 teams, but it might not be, because one is going to the group of five. The best team in the group of five gets one bid. And if Notre Dame is top 12, they're getting another bid. So really it's 10 teams, four of which are conference champions. So there's like six at-large bids, right? And you know the Big Ten and the SEC are going to gobble a lot of them. How Notre Dame does on a week-to-week basis and their ability to stay in the playoff hunt is going to have an impact on every other conference's at-large chances.
Do you like that?
Notre Dame has that.
Do you like that?
I love it. I think it's great. It's just another chess piece on the whole board as you're walking through it during the season. I think it's great. And that's the only reason. Look, Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, was on the four-team committee that created this playoff. He could have tried to take Notre Dame into the ACC as a football member, but they were able to carve out access to the playoff that would allow them to preserve independence. I mean, it's a good deal for them. If Notre Dame's 10-2, they are in the playoff. Whereas in the four-team event, Notre Dame at 10-2, they weren't making it. So everybody's got to pay attention to Notre Dame and how they do. They play a bunch of games against the ACC. They got the USC game. They have a tough schedule. But if they are 10-2, they are in.
All right. Before I get you out of here, we like to get in the weeds. John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline, nationally syndicated columnist, Brad Sussmat. We chop it up every week on the college football front. In the weeds this week. Potential legislation, I should say, about walk-ons being eliminated. Walk-ons, I think, are a key part of any college football program. You're not going to get your roster beat up, your 85-man. And if you eliminate walk-ons, and I've seen where there's some coaches, Dabo's been one of them, that said, I'll just take money out of my own pocket to fund this. And so far, it's no, that's not going to happen. What do you make out of this story about walk-ons as we get in the weeds, John?
Well, this is one of the repercussions from the antitrust lawsuit that was settled, right? The billion-dollar House versus NCAA lawsuit. In addition to revenue sharing, it is creating roster caps. So what does that mean? Well, typically, football programs have 85 players on scholarship, and then they have another 25 or 30 walk-ons. So what the settlement is going to increase scholarships but create caps. So instead of 85 and 25 walk-ons, you're going to have 90 kids on scholarship, and that's it. There's not going to be another 20 or 30 walk-ons. It's interesting what the impact that could have on parity, however. Mm-hmm. Some of those walk-ons are really good, right? Walk-ons at Georgia and Ohio State, they're good players. The 93rd guy on Ohio State who was a walk-on, under the new rule, he's not going to be at Ohio State. So he could end up going to Toledo
Bowling
or
Green.
Boise State.
Yeah.
Bowling Green.
Yeah.
So it could create a little bit more parity with the group of five because of the trickle-down impact of Ohio States and Georgia's not being able to hoard the best walk-ons.
What about this idea, take it a step further? A season is happening and a kicker gets hurt and a coach goes over to the soccer field or a coach just has a kid who walks on as the season is progressing because of injury. Okay, that's an extreme case, but I've seen it happen. You've probably seen it happen. And they find a kicker and that's a great story. This kid's going to line up. He wasn't even kicking 3 weeks ago. He's majoring in biology, whatever. That's going to go away. Those little side stories are going to go away.
I believe they will. A lot of the details have to be figured out, especially in terms of, you know, medical issues. Like if a kid has to medically retire during the season, I don't know how they are going to be able to backfill rosters under the cap rules. We also don't know what the number is going to be for football. Is it going to be 85, 90, 100? We don't know what it's going to be for the other sports, right? Are they going to cap men's basketball rosters at 12? Or are they going to let them go to 14? So many details have to be worked out for this antitrust suit. And the judge still has to approve the thing. Judge Claudia Wilkin up here in Oakland, it hasn't been approved. So we are still waiting for a lot of details, but certainly the tradition of walk-ons across major college football is in serious jeopardy because of this suit. It's the same suit that is creating a revenue sharing arrangement for athletes so that your left guard is going to get paid $50,000 a year. Well, it means the third string left guard who had been a walk-on may not be on the team anymore.
It's good stuff. I will let you go off that, as always, every week, chopping it up with the great John Wilner, nationally syndicated columnist, as we get together and roll through it. Have a great week.
Thanks very much, Brad.